I call this meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order and note for the record that a quorum is present. Our first order of business is the approval of the minutes from Tuesday, April 11, 2023. Vice Chair Edelson, do I have a motion?
I move those minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So we are back to doing our budget bills, and we'll have some more of the combining to meeting up with the Senate structure and for conference committee today, as well as another bill that we'll be taking up. So the first order of business is House File 717, Representative Reed. And as you make your way up, I will move that House File 717 be placed on the general register. So, welcome to the committee. It's good to see you. And I know you also have an A3 amendment. Would you like me to move that amendment right away to get the bill in the shape you'd like?
Yes, Chair, I would like to do that.
So I will move the A3 amendment. Would you briefly describe your amendment, Representative Reed?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So the amendment here is to designate a 7-mile stretch of Highway 5. It's basically Highway 41, Trunk Highway 41, also known as Hazeltine Boulevard, to Mitchell Road in Eden Prairie. And we were very careful working with MnDOT and others to create a 7-mile stretch. It was very important that we create a 7-mile stretch here. And that's it.
Great. So any discussion in the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A3 amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, dearly beloved members. So I'm here to present House File 717. We are working to rename a 7-mile stretch of what is now known as the Augie Mueller Memorial Highway. And we have talked to the family members of former Representative Augie Mueller, who passed away in the 90s, worked with the family to create a 7-mile stretch that is respectful of his history and his work on the highway in our area. So this area, the 7-mile stretch, would also allow a portion of it to remain the Augie Mueller Highway right alongside the Arboretum. And we do have Jennifer Witt from MnDOT, who has been working with us a lot on this bill. And if you have any further questions, she'd be great to detail any other information about this.
Great. Thank you, Representative Ream. Discussion to the bill. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we did hear this bill in transportation, and I know originally there was some concern with the Augie Mueller part of the road. It sounds like that has been worked out with the family, because it is unusual for us to remove that after once it's been assigned. Do you have any more information in regard to how the family is agreeable with that change?
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Yes, we did have some conversations over the phone with a couple of the members from Augie Mueller's family, and they were very supportive of, you know, designating the 7-mile stretch for Prince. There were no issues, really. And a very large portion will remain at the Augie Mueller Memorial Highway. I believe the Sibley, he was a Sibley County representative, so... But yeah, they were very respectful and very supportive of this change.
Thank you. Any further discussion? No further discussion. Representative Green, last word on your bill.
Well, thank you very much for the time and considering this bill. I know Prince was a very important figure in the musical world, but also in the state of Minnesota. And we've had a number of meetings with people who are very supportive of this. And like I said, we all wanted to be very supportive and respectful of the late Augie Mueller, who was, in my understanding, was like our Representative Frank Hornstein. You know, he worked with a number of farmers to work out the kinks in the road and did a great job. And so we want to continue having the name Augie Mueller Memorial Highway there, but also just have that seven-mile stretch designated for Prince.
Great. Thank you, Representative Ream. So I renew my motion that House File 717 as amended be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and House File 717 as amended has been placed on the general register. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the next item on the agenda is House File 1937, the Veterans and Military Affairs Budget Bill. Representative Newton. So as you make your way to the table, I will move that House File 1937 be placed on the general register.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Yeah, welcome to the committee, Representative. I will also move the DE3 amendment, and so we also have an A4 amendment to the DE3, so the DE3 is in front of us, and then I will also move the A4 amendment to the DE3.
Good.
Is that, would that
That's be correct, Madam okay. Chair. That gets billed in the order that I'd like.
Okay. Any discussion to the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The A4 amendment to the DE3 amendment is adopted. So do we want to take up A5 right away? Okay, great. So we'll do, so if you want to speak to the DE3 as amended, Representative Newton.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1937 is amended. Funds the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Military Affairs, the National Guard, as well as several other programs benefiting veterans, providing services, job training, and physical and psychological recuperation. The appropriations in this bill closely match the governor's budget proposals for DVA and DMA and contain relatively few change items. Overall, the Department of Veterans Affairs is funded with $168.5 million in direct appropriations from the general fund and $6 million in statutory appropriations. The Department of Military Affairs, meanwhile, receives almost $49 million from the general fund plus $4.4 million in statutory appropriations. And I'd like to mention some of the bills that we've added to what the governor had. We've added funding for Camp Bliss, which is Representative Bliss's proposal, and it has nothing to do with him. It happens to be the same name. Veterans on the Lake with Representative Lissigard's bill. A Veterans Resilience Project with Representative Clardy's bill. Representative Coulter has money for the Veterans Museum, the ongoing funding. Representative Greenman had funding for Every Third Saturday project, and Representative Creshaw has Camp Ripley Museum. And then we also have from Representative Bennett the 9/11 Veterans Bonus Program. So we've got, it was an excellent committee. We had a lot of bipartisan support on everything that we did. There was basically no controversy. And I have to say, it was really a pleasure to lead that group of individuals. They were really super to work with. So one of the things that we looked at in this funding that we haven't done before is we really focused on the veteran spouses and their families to make sure that they're cared for as well as the veterans. Because a veteran, for those of us that serve, know you absolutely need the support of your family if you're going to be successful. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for any questions if anyone has any.
Thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Fuchsia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Newton, thank you. A lot of, if not everything in this bill, touches my district, from the Veterans Service Office to the cemetery, and of course the military museum, which will be a statewide asset, and the funding for the museum. And I just a couple of things, and I can't thank you enough for the way you approach this. And you said in your comments it was a good committee and non-controversial, and my hat's off to you, because that's just who you are. when you approach problems, you approach them with a solution, and you look for the best possible, and you just work with everybody involved. And I just, I mean, you're going to hear lots of it, but I just can't thank you enough for what you've done for my districts and my constituents. So happy to vote for this, and thank you.
Good, thank you.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sergeant Major.
Yes, sir.
I see in here that the veterans bonus program, that we lowered that from the, what we originally talked about, we were estimating $22 million that we needed to make sure that we had covered everyone down to $15
million? Yes, that's right, Representative Farr. What we, excuse me, Madam Chair. We will come back if we need additional appropriations, that we discuss this with the department, and if additional appropriations are needed, but we think that we can do it with the $15 million.
Okay. I hadn't. No, I'm doing it. Sorry, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. When we had looked at that, and when I had talked to the department, I think that the number we came up with was that, so I was surprised to see the change. But if needed, we can come back with that. I will echo Representative Crenshaw's words. I really appreciate what you've done here. Really appreciate the fact that we could bring this as a standalone bill. I think that means a lot. I've literally talked to hundreds of veterans in the last couple of weeks, and so it means a lot to them that we can come together and do this. So thank you very much for your work, Sergeant Major.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Farr. And Madam Chair, I say that'll cut down on a lot of emails for a lot of us as well.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Newton, I notice I'm on the Housing Committee, and we deal a lot with homelessness, and I see that you canceled the Veterans Homelessness Initiative dollars and put that back into the general fund, and then I think reappropriated it generally. And whereas I know that the homeless, through Veterans Homelessness Program, is probably the best example of what we've done to successfully deal with homelessness, I don't think we're finished yet. And so can you give me some understanding as to why you decided to eliminate that particular initiative and then just fund it back as general dollars?
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Petersburg. I think I'm going to have to ask for some help from Ms. Roberts.
Good morning, Ms. Roberts. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. And I would point you to the detail tracking sheet. If you look on line 100, you will see that cancellation of the $3 million, but then it is appropriated again for the same initiative. This was a department request because they were unable to spend the money. And the way that we show it in the bill is just so that it doesn't count as new spending, but it is being directed back towards the same initiative.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That makes more sense to me. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Any further discussion? Thank you. We have one more amendment to add on, which we've been adding on to all the budget bills. So I will move the adoption of the A5 amendment. And this is the financial review of the grant review process. So, Representative Newton, any comments to the A5?
I have to say Representative Hudella, who's new to the legislature, has been working on this, and it's really needed. After all the years I've spent in the legislature, I think it's a good idea.
All right, so with that, we have the A5 in front of us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and the A5 amendment to the DE3 is adopted. So we have the DE3 as amended in front of us. Any further discussion? Last word, Representative Newman.
Thank you all. I look forward to presenting the bill on the floor. Thank you.
Great. So all those in favor of the DE3 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. And I move that House File 1937, as amended, be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and House File 1937, as amended, has been placed on the General Register. Thank you,
Thank
Representative
you.
Newton.
Thank you.
So the next item on the agenda is House File 1723, Representative Freiberg, the Elections Bill. And so I move that, or yes, I will move that House File 1723 be laid over, and this bill is going to be temporarily laid over until we hear the state government budget bill, where they will be merged together. So we have the House File 1723 in front of us, and we have the A11 amendment, which is an author's amendment. So Representative Freiberg, would you like to move the A11 amendment?
Sure, I will move the A11 amendment.
Great. Do you want to just very quickly walk through the A11?
Sure. Generally speaking, this amendment removes the provisions of House File 3, Representative Greenman's bill, which is being heard separately. That one is scheduled to be heard on the floor tomorrow, in fact. So it removes those provisions. It reduces the appropriation amount accordingly. That's basically what it does.
Any discussion to the A11 amendment? I'm sorry, I was trying to catch eyes, but so no discussion to the A11 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A11 amendment is adopted. So we have one more amendment, the A12 amendment. And so Representative Freiberg, would you like to move the A12 amendment?
Sure, unless somebody else wants to.
Okay.
But yeah, I can just move it.
Moves the A12 amendment. Discussion to, well, could you briefly describe the A12 amendment as well? To
sure. Sure. This amendment was a request from people with a higher pay grade than I have. It makes a redistricting change affecting Senate District 12. It does make a pretty minor change. I believe the projected population impact is 150 people, and it does not cause any of the impacted districts to violate the best practice of staying under 1% deviation from the ideal population. So that's what it does.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. So discussion to the A12 amendment. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, I know that this was not heard in committee, that it was apparently drafted and dropped last night. It is a pure policy amendment, and that's abnormal for Ways and Means. But I also would ask that this not be engrossed into the bill. We haven't had a chance to let the public talk about this. We haven't had a chance for anyone to really review this. Some of us got phone calls last night from apparently the higher power that you were referencing. This is not something that I think is needed to put into this bill right now, and I just think that this should be, that the public should be afforded an opportunity to look at this. Having served on the redistricting committee, I can tell you that and I think Representative Cleburne was on that with us as well, people would call in with testimony on some of the most minute aspects of redistricting, and this amendment would not really afford the public any opportunity to do that here in committee today. So I would ask that, much like we saw yesterday, that this not be put into the bill and it be given an opportunity to be discussed more thoroughly by the public.
So, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Nash. My understanding is that the appropriate place to, if we are going to make this change, the appropriate place to do so is in committee. It would not be germane to do so on the floor. I have spoken to leadership about this because I was kind of surprised to see this come up at this stage as well. There is, from my understanding, there is a willingness to take comments. You know, I think we should put it in at this phase. There is a willingness to receive comments from the GOP side and as well as members of the public. And if there is a change that would be amenable to everyone, we could make that on the floor. But in order to be able to make that change on the floor, we need to put this in committee. Otherwise, it would not be germane on the floor.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And if we are to, under that paradigm, if you're going to put this in committee today and you want the public to have the ability to comment on it today, how would that happen? Because it was posted within a very small number of hours. I don't think that it's an appropriate on-ramp for here. So I'm going to ask for a roll call on this amendment. I think that this is not the appropriate place. If we are to be about process and procedure and making sure that folks have an opportunity to see everything that's going on here, particularly as it relates to redistricting, which once every 10 years, if you've never served on the committee, it's an interesting effort. But I think that this is, right now, this is not going to be a bipartisan effort, and we've tried to make sure that is the case. Again, we didn't have the chance to review this, Representative Freiberg, so I would urge a no vote on this.
A roll call has been requested. We will do a roll call. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to say that as the Vice Chair of Redistricting last year, we saw this map that was posted online for a considerable amount of time. It was posted long before the maps were finished or that we received the maps from the court's direction. This change does not significantly change the district. It is well within the guidelines and principles that were posted for the redistricting committee. This was seen by members of the public when the Senate held, I think, one of their last hearings. This was posted. This was discussed. People had an opportunity to comment on it at that time. And if we are going to have this discussion, and there will be plenty of time to discuss it, and the bills for the state government that this will roll into are not identical between the House and the Senate, so there will be plenty of time for the public to now see that this is being discussed and have time in conference committee to give their comments, and we'll have plenty of opportunity to be fully vetted, and I am supportive of the amendment, and I would ask our members to vote yes.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the bill's author, 12A and 12B, could you articulate to me where that district is? I don't have everything memorized, and if you could articulate where that district is and what two members currently hold those seats.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Scott. It's in northwestern Minnesota. I can't identify all of the areas, but it is the current incumbent senator, who is the primary one affected by this, is Senator Tori Westrum, a GOP member. I could be wrong about the House member, but I think it might be Representative Franson in the House.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the bill's author. Have those folks, if it is indeed Representative Franson, has she been consulted? Is she aware about this amendment?
Representative Freiberg.
I have not spoken with her. It's possible that leadership staff has, however.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize. I'm having a hard time understanding where this amendment originated and why in the 11th hour it's coming. If the bill's author could articulate where this amendment came from and why now.
Representative Freiberg, and I'll mention that Representative Cleburne did talk about the history of the amendment in this originating with the Senate GOP last year. So this amendment, as Representative Cleburne noted, so just, I don't know if you, that was helpful to hear kind of the history too. We can have Representative Cleburne speak a little bit more to that, but Representative Freiberg.
Yeah, this amendment was requested by House leadership, and I understand they had conversations with Senate GOP leadership. So that is where it originated, and Representative Cleburne, Chair Cleburne's description of it is accurate as well. It has been out there for approximately a year.
Thank you for that answer. As a person that, and I think there are a lot of people around this table here that care about transparency and process, and as Representative Nash alluded to, there's no reason in my mind that, you know, the committee that oversees this can't call a meeting and hear this portion and have this amendment and have it appropriately posted for the public's consumption so that they have a way to weigh in on these changes. And we do this all the time after deadline week. we make exceptions for teachers to meet for this exact reason. And when it's something as important as changing district lines, even if it's 150 people, it's precedent setting. And so I would urge members to vote against this amendment, have it go through the correct process. It won't take more than a day to do so. And I think it's a much better way of adopting an amendment like this than doing it here and then talking about it on the House floor or in conference committee. Let's have the discussion ahead of time. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the author, so what this particular amendment, what causes it to be a necessity that it has to be done this year rather than next year? Obviously, the election happened already last year, and we know that, as you said, and as Representative Claiborne said, it's been around for a year, yet now it's just coming to us after it's been around for a year. That seems a little bit strange, and since next year we could deal with it just as easy as we can this year, that would allow us to have the committee work done that's necessary. Why can't we do that?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg, there were quite a few provisions that were discussed last year. Last year ended up not being the most productive session in the world, unfortunately, and a lot of things were left undone. This is one of them. I am trying to avoid discussing individual people affected by this a whole lot, but as I said, this was a request from Senate GOP leadership that House DFL leadership was amenable to it and asked this to be included in the bill, so that is why it is here.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I still am unsure as to why that amenability didn't occur earlier in the session and have it done rather than now at the last minute. It does seem a little bit less transparent and seems a little bit strange. And again, my question is, I'm not sure that I see any necessity that it has to be done this particular year. Next year, in January, February, whenever we meet, the bill could be run on its own and go through a committee and still have plenty of time for the election cycle next year. We've already gone through one election cycle with it currently the way it is without this change, and it does seem strange that we are pushing not only precedents, but it seems like a lack of transparency and others. It seems backwards to me, and so I would highly recommend a no vote, and let's deal with it next year.
I have two more people on the list. We'll go, they both have spoke twice or once already, and that's fine. We'll go to Nash and then Claiborne, and then we'll go to a vote. So, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the author, is this the only correction you're going to be making from a redistricting perspective, or do you envision more?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash. I don't envision any more. My understanding is this is a one-off situation. I mean, nothing in the legislative process is certain for sure, but my understanding is this was just a one-off request to respond to a request from the Senate GOP.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I actually met with the Senate Minority Leader last night. We bumped into each other at the MPPOA, and we asked them about the genesis of this amendment, and they didn't know a thing about it. So it's just another reason to have some cause of concern. Senator Johnson knew nothing about this, so I'm not sure that this was originated by Senate GOP. So I would ask that before we go to a vote that we withdraw this. It hasn't been discussed by them, wasn't requested by them, and I don't know why it's here. It was time-stamped yesterday at 12:16, so I'm not exactly sure that even met deadlines for committee. I'm not 100% sure. But once again, this was not requested by the Senate GOP. It has ample time to go back to committee to be discussed so that the public can weigh in on this, and whether it was out there previously doesn't have any bearing, because what happened in a previous legislative session has no bearing on this current one. So again, I think this is Whether it winds up ultimately being benign, it's all about process, and there was none. So I would urge a no vote. Or if give the author one last chance to withdraw it, it's just misguided.
Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a little bit of level setting here. The map that is before us was in fact drawn by the then chair of redistricting for the Senate. So I'm very surprised that that individual knows nothing of the map or its lines or its intent. I'll start with that. Secondly, the reason it's important to do this amendment at this time is that we do redistricting every 10 years. And this current year, and the reason we're doing it in this year, which is different from doing it next year, is because we are required by statute to do a redistricting bill for the Met Council. We do not have a redistricting committee at this time, so therefore the elections committee is the appropriate venue to do this bill and to bring it forward at this time. I find that the amendment, while it is not one that I have drafted and it is not one that I am asking for, it is within the guidelines of the redistricting principles that were adopted by the redistricting committee. And it is a reasonable map to bring forward. It does not harm anyone, and it is an appropriate time with the redistricting of the Met Council. I do not think that we should be opening up redistricting every year that we're in the legislature. So with that, I will say thank you to Representative Freiberg for carrying this and adding it to this other mandated redistricting requirement.
Further discussion. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, my apologies. I had a situation in my private sector job I took care of. So I'm stepping into this cold. I'm sorry. I thought that this was something that had gotten figured out at a leadership level and that there was no problem with it. I apologize, Madam Chair. I'm walking into this cold. Is there something going on that I don't know about, Representative Freiberg?
Representative
Freiberg. Very general question, I know.
Lead Garofalo, I'm as in the dark as you. I thought it was worked out at a leadership level as well.
Representative
So I just, Representative Freiberg, and if you've been asked this question already, I apologize for this, but do we have your commitment that there's not going to be any redistricting changes unless there's broad-based bipartisan consensus this year?
Representative Freiberg.
Lead Garofalo, I'm one of 201 legislators. I don't plan to add anything else. As far as I know, this is just a one-off thing to help a request from the Senate GOP. So, you know, I don't have the ability to control what the other 200 legislators do. So, like I said, I don't have any ulterior motive here. This is, my understanding, this is just to help out the Senate GOP.
Okay. So,
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I'm just going to so you understand why our side of the aisle may be a lot of bit concerned about redistricting. With one sided control of government, there's this concerned that you guys are going to go out and do a new redistricting map. Okay, that is what. No, okay, no.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so now
let's.
I apologize. Okay,
yeah.
And Representative Cleaborn, I have the same response.
Yeah.
But I also have the same response to people raising income taxes when we have a $17.5 billion budget surplus.
Apologies. Okay?
Yep. No, it's good. Madam Chair, I just want you to understand. And my apologies, I got pulled away from this. That's why this side of the aisle is worried. Stuff that we never thought would ever enter the realm of possibility is happening. We've always had an agreement that election laws would be bipartisan. That seems to be changing. So Representative Freiberg, that's why this side of the aisle is concerned. There's a worry that you guys are going to tweak the redistricting map to lock in what you have now for another 8 years. So if you could just say you're not going to do it, I think it would calm people down.
Representative Freiberg.
Sure, I'll take a gamble and say that we're not going to adopt a whole new redistricting map.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, there has been a roll call called on the A12 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Chair Edelson? Lead Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Akam? Representative Egbaje?
Aye.
Egbaje, aye. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Aye.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Gomez, aye. Representative Hassan?
Aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Heintzman?
Pass.
Heintzman abstain. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Howard?
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Cleborne, aye. Representative Freeshaw? Freeshaw, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly? Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Knorr?
Aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
No.
Novotny, no. Representative O'Neill is excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Farr?
No.
Farr, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
No.
Schumacher, no. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Joachim?
Aye.
Joachim, aye. Representative Akam? Representative Lilly? And Representative O'Neill is excused. Madam Chair, there are 17 ayes, 6 nays, and 3, or I'm sorry, 1 abstain and 2 excused.
On a vote of 17 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails and the A12 amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was hoping this bill would feature all of the bipartisan solidarity that the previous bill featured, and we're off to a great start. So this bill contains many policy provisions that I'm proud of, but given that this is the Budget Committee, I will focus on the budget provisions. In brief, this bill funds the Office of the Secretary of State and the Campaign Finance Board. So we heard testimony from the director of our Campaign Finance Board and committee about the desperate straits our public financing system is in. Specifically, he said that our public financing system is, quote, dying on the vine, unquote. More and more candidates are bypassing our public financing system, even though public financing is a surefire way to reduce the influence of special interests in our elections. So this bill will create, will increase the public subsidy statutory appropriation by just under $3 million in fiscal year 2025. We heard from our cities and counties about the need to have a sustainable source of funding for election infrastructure and other election purposes. So this bill sets up a new Voting Operations, Technology, and Election Resources, or Voter Fund. It allocates $2.6 million over the biennium to this fund. It includes several other budget provisions, including the state match under the Help America Vote Act, the redistricting litigation fees and costs related to a couple of bills, such as the early voting bill, and a bill related to lobbying political subdivisions. Seeing as we had one of the smaller budget targets of the different committees out there, and this is the Budget Committee, I think maybe I'll just keep my comments short, but I'm happy to stand for any questions, and I know House Research and Fiscal Analysts are here to answer technical questions as well.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Discussion to the bill as amended. Discussion to the bill as amended. Okay. Seeing no further discussion, any final comments, Representative Freiberg?
This bill protects our election workers, makes voting more accessible, and provides clarity on who is funding our elections. I think it's a great bill, and I encourage members to support it when that moment comes, which is not now because it is just being laid over.
Correct. So with that, House File 1723 is laid over. Thank you. And so the next bill up is House File 1830, Representative Cleborne, the State Government Budget Bill. Hello, Representative Cleborne. Representative Cleborne moves that House File 1830 be placed on the General Register. and the only amendment we have to adopt is the A5 amendment. So we'll go ahead and just do that now, and then you can describe the bill. So the A5 amendment is a grant management amendment, and Representative Cleavorn moved the A5 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A5 amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, today before us, we have a bill that reflects the important work of the state and local government and our responsibility to the people of Minnesota. This is a very good bill. It reflects a balanced approach to meeting the needs of our government to serve the people of Minnesota. The jurisdiction of this bill is broad. It pertains to the constitutional officers, the legislature, over 30 agencies, and then what I call the big four, management and budget, Minnesota IT, the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Administration. These entities are the foundation on which good and responsible self-governance is built. This bill restores part of the capacity of our state government to carry out the work of governance and to manage with the appropriate staffing levels. And with that, I would just like to walk through some of the provisions of the bill. In the legislature, there are important pieces that have been added in addition to the funding of the legislature itself. There is a legislative task force on aging. We are adding translation services, and there is an advisory task force on infrastructure. Moving on to the Office of the Governor, there is an addition of the Office of Tribal Relations, which is an important office to help address the disparities between the Native and non-Native peoples of Minnesota. At the State Office of the Auditor, there are important provisions that will allow for technology staffing, a township specialist, grants to help our townships with the accounting systems that they need to use in being able to report on time. There's also a provision for regulatory compliance and an oversight dashboard, which will help our townships do the work that they need to do and have a one-stop place to go. There are also electronic auditing tools, which are provided for in that budget. In the Office of the Attorney General, there is a significant investment on staffing and creation of new resources to deal with antitrust efforts. And also, this funding will go hand in hand with the enhanced criminal prosecution funding that we brought forward earlier this year. For the Secretary of State, this bill provides additional funding for the Safe at Home program, which provides secure and confidential mailing addresses for targets of domestic abuse and other forms of violence. There is also a provision which will add greater physical security to the Secretary of State's office, and additional funding, I believe, is also provided for our business registration part. Minnesota IT has a substantial investment in this bill, and Minnesota IT is receiving the significant funding to upgrade the growing role of integrating our state agencies and the increasing demands of cybersecurity. The bill also provides local cybersecurity grants, enterprise-wide cloud transition, and more accessible digital technology across our state systems. The Department of Administration, which supports a wide variety of state agencies and nonprofits, this bill has a significant focus on how grants management and grants oversight will be provided for going forward. And I'm very excited about those initiatives. It also has a bill in here for a feasibility study of creating a statewide grants management system so that there's one system for us to be able to see across all of the agencies what is happening. There are additional appropriations for public television, for AMPRS funding, and for our state archaeologist and demographer. In management and budget, this is the central service agency serving the governor, the legislature, and 100 state government entities with a workforce of over 56,000 employees and serving the public. This will help modernize state government and our state workforce, including staffing, auditing, accountability, and there's a wonderful provision in here that helps us retain our employees with disabilities. And I thank Representative Breyer for bringing that bill forward. Moving on to the Department of Revenue, there are just maintenance of current programs that are provided, but these extra resources will help them continue to provide the excellent service that they do statewide. And there, as I mentioned earlier, there are cybersecurity grant programs, Representative Newton's bill for upgrades to the roof for the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission complex is in here. There is Representative Freiberg's bill for flag redesign commission, and young people are really excited about that, to have a flag and a seal that supports our state as it is today. I also would like to highlight the Market Bucks, which is now called Healthy Eating Here at Home, provision, which is in the bill with a significant increase. Representative Jordan's bill, which would provide a hazard assessment for the St. Anthony Falls, and that's a really important project for the safety of our state. In here, there is also a provision which would provide a statutory appropriation for the legislature. Let's see. I'm trying to think. I don't want to repeat myself. Oh, I would also like to highlight Representative Freiberg's bill on land survey monuments. This is really important when it comes to property rights in our state. There also, the Private Cemeteries Act has been updated, which amends the laws of how we identify, treat, and handle burial sites and cemeteries in our states, and what makes it clear what may not be disturbed. There is an update for the CAP board for the 30-year-old plan for the Capital Area Design Framework, and the bill goes on and on. So I will leave it at that, and I will be happy to answer your questions. It's really a good, good bill for moving state government forward and helping state government serve the people of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Cleborn. Discussion to the bill. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I serve as the Republican lead on this committee, and I do thank Chair Cleborn for a lot of the work that we got done together.
Yeah.
I will say that the investment in Minute is an appropriate one, that we have come a long way since I got here 9 years ago when Minute was the punchline to a bad joke, and it's come a long way, and we do need to make investments in our state's infrastructure. But I will point out that there are tremendous increases over the base. Some of the highlights are the governor's office has 154% over last year's base, attorney general 45%, MMB 64%. And I think that this is emblematic of a lot of the things that we've been seeing this session, that we are spending a lot of money that would be best served to be back in people's pockets. But you've heard me say this quote before, and I guarantee you'll get to hear it again, but the bureaucracy is expanding to meet the needs of the expanding bureaucracy. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time. But that's exactly what's happening here, is that the bureaucracy is expanding to meet the needs of the bureaucracy. The chair and I have had good moments together, and we've had moments of contention. We'll save the latter for the floor, but not here in committee. There's just a lot of growth here that I don't think is particularly warranted. And I just think that putting this much money into the bill for organizations that, in my estimation, also need massive reform before they get any more money, we could have done that better. But I will also say that I appreciate the chair and some of the things that she has had me or allowed me to put into the bill. There are some minor tweaks to minute language that will provide some oversight for cloud computing. But overall, this is a very spendy bill, and I can't support it, Madam Chair, but it does have some things in there that I would support if it wasn't laden with other things in other places. So I would encourage a no vote on this, but maybe we can continue to work together and have some amazing DEs on the floor for some cuts in spending. But thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the bill's author, Representative Cleborn, I echo what Representative Nash said about Minute. You know, we have some very archaic systems within the government, and that is one thing I'm not opposed to improving upon.
Mm-hmm.
But with all the increases in these different budget line items, I'm wondering how many new FTEs are being created with this new budget that you're proposing?
Representative Cleburne.
Madam Chair, there are approximately 158.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So 158 new employees. And do you, Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Cleburne, do you have a breakdown of somewhere, a document that you can provide the committee and the full body, actually, on where those 158 new employees will be according to the budget items?
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have gone through this. I'll just quickly give you an overview. So MMB will have approximately 50. The Attorney General will have approximately 32, and that's almost evenly split between legal, non-legal, and always keep in mind that there are IT folks in all of these numbers. The Auditor will have 11. Revenue will have 0. The Secretary of State will have 7. Minute will have 13. And Administration, oh, I just have their total number, sorry. I don't have their individual one written down. What I would like to say to you, though, is that when you look at the level of FTEs that are included, the 158 that I mentioned, this still does not get us where we would have been from about 2003. We've had 20 years of disinvestment and cuts. So even though it seems like a lot of employees to you at this moment, we are still far behind the staffing levels that we would have had at some time ago. So thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being prepared for committee and having those answers. I appreciate that. If you could get back on the admin number eventually,
happy to.
That'd be great. Representative Cleburne. I do have a question. The governor's office is getting a 154% increase. Could you kind of give me an explanation for that?
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, and it's a really great question because statistics can often be deceiving. And so what is happening is they're going to a direct appropriation, which is much more transparent for the public to be able to see what it actually costs to run the governor's office as opposed to billing agencies for the work that they do. So in addition to seeing that increase there, you will also see that there is a provision for cuts for the agencies so that those costs are actually offset.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the admin number that you're going to provide for us, with 154% increase, is the governor's office going to be adding FTEs then? And would that fall under the admin FTE number?
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you very much. Let me just pull that back up, and I apologize. I didn't give that to you earlier. So I believe that the governor's office has a net increase of 10. I believe it's a net increase of 10. And I can get you those exact numbers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Cleburne.
Yes, it is 10. I found it. It is 10.
Okay. Thank you. And so with all the new IT that we're going to be getting, won't there be some efficiencies that will be realized and therefore you'd actually need fewer employees? Would that be something that would be a logical conclusion to draw?
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you. And Representative Scott, I think that is something that we will be looking forward to. And it's part of what Lead Nash was talking about earlier and asking for some additional reporting. He's looking to see where efficiencies will be created and how they'll be created. And in some of the lines that are listed for full-time employees, I couldn't tell you, I'll have to go back to my book to look, but there is a decrease in the number of employees. So it starts off with a higher number and then drops to a lower number.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And final question. Representative Cleburne, so in light of what you just explained to me, so when this bill reaches the floor, would that reporting mechanism, could that be something in the form of an amendment that would be acceptable to you so that we can look at these efficiencies once the new IT systems or the new IT systems are in place? Is that something that you would be agreeable to if an amendment was offered to put that kind of requirement in the bill? Thank you.
Representative Cleburne.
Have you been speaking to my lead, Nash, on this one? No. Lead Nash is currently working with Minute to see what kind of appropriate reporting would be there and available. And always, The devil is in the details. I will not commit to supporting any amendment until I actually see the final words.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Further discussion to the bill. Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Claiborne, I'm focusing on the spreadsheets.
Yes.
On the first three pages we have. Which line item contains the governor's new lake home? Which item is that on here?
Representative
Claiborne. Thank you. I'm really disappointed, Lead Garofalo, that you didn't watch the state government committee meeting when we said, I don't discuss that issue. And it's no longer a lake home. I think the Republican donor is keeping their home.
Representative Garofalo.
The Republican donor is what?
It's the home is, as I understand it from reading the Star Tribune, I've had no conversations with the governor or with admin about it. I understand that the original home that was located was the home for rent of a large Republican donor, but that's just what I read in the Star Tribune. I have no idea.
Representative.
You mean Mike McFadden, the candidate for Senate?
I have no idea whose home it was.
Yeah. Representative Garofalo.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Claiborne. So there was a budget item in there for they had signed an agreement to lease that home on the lake at Sunfish Lake for.
It's my understanding. Thank you. It's my understanding that that home is no longer the home that will be leased. It's my understanding from the Star Tribune that there's another home that will be leased, okay, or for some news outlet.
Representative Raffel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Claiborne. You know, my home in Farmington is available to the governor if he wants to raise, if he wants to rent it out for $18,000 a month, $17,000. So we can do that. If you just want to run that up the food chain, maybe that's an option. So on page three of the spreadsheet here.
Would you please tell me which spreadsheet you're looking at? There are three.
The House State and Local Government Policy and Finance General Fund Summary Direct and Open Appropriation spreadsheet. So this is the one. There's pages 1 through 3 of 26.
Yes. Okay.
And so we have a halfway over to the side there, we have dollars from base, percentage from base.
Yes.
And when we go to page 3, line 118, we see a 41% increase in net general fund spending for this area. Mm-hmm. In your comments, you described your bill as balanced. My question is, in light of a 41% increase, when you say balanced, balanced against what?
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you very much. And Lead Garofalo, I would also like you to look at line 111. So in the first year, you will see that it's very much front-loaded, and that has a lot to do with the infrastructure investments and IT across all of our systems. So you'll see that that base number is much larger at 41%. But if you go to the second and the base of the $200 million, you'll see that it's only an 18% increase. So, yes, there is a lot of upfront spending in this bill, one-time spending.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And just to be clear, we're looking at, as we're on line 118, mm-hmm, our February base is $1.1 billion. And as we scroll over to the both the governor's recommendation and then the recommendations in House File 1830,
mm-hmm,
even if we subtract the min IT expenses, we're seeing a pretty robust expansion in government spending. And so my question is, you described your bill as being balanced.
Yes.
And I just wanted to know what it's balanced against. We see more spending. We see additional government growth.
Mm-hmm.
What is that balanced against? What are the trade-offs that show fiscal restraint in this committee?
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Lead Garofalo. It's balanced against the needs of Minnesotans. Minnesotans deserve to have their data protected no matter which agency that they're in. We have systems, payroll systems, HR systems. All of our IT is being held together with bubblegum, twine, paperclip. And it really needs the investments that you see in this bill. The state demographer needs be able to collect data quickly. When we're talking about making sure that we have monuments that will protect people's property rights, it is balanced against the needs that Minnesota
citizens have and the services that they expect from their government. And it is balanced against making sure that the applications that they use to access government are simple and easy to use, whether they're using their phone, their iPad, or a computer. The systems that we currently have, you know, it might take people an hour to get through an application to apply for services, where we have seen when we are able to meet users where they are with appropriate IT interface, then they can do that work in 15 minutes, 25 minutes, and they're done. So when you balance it against the needs and time of our citizens, I think it's a great bill.
Representative Gruffo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Cleburne, you made the case for why the bill is big. I'm asking what's on the other side of the equation. What's the balance that shows restraint?
Representative Cleburne.
Well, restraint is always in the eye of the beholder. Whenever we can save a Minnesotan time, that is something that is a good thing. So the savings may not be in dollars. The savings may be in their time, effort, and satisfaction with the interface with government.
Representative Gruffo.
Thank you. Last question. Representative Cleburne, does this meet the needs of the State Government Finance Committee? Or will we require additional need spending in the future?
Representative Cleburne.
Are you offering to open your wallet?
No, Madam Chair, I'm not. Representative Cleburne, I'm serious. If you look at your bill, you're projecting that you're going to have a state government finance bill that goes from $1.5 billion down to $1.3 billion.
Yes.
I don't believe that. So are there unmet needs out there after the passage of this bill that you see need to be addressed?
Representative Cleburne.
As with all of the work that I do at the legislature, I let the community drive that work. If there are needs that the public comes to us that says need to be addressed, then I think we should listen to that conversation and address those needs as they're brought forward.
Representative Gruffo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as we know from our from the data of our economic forecast, we have GDP growth projected to be around 2%. Minnesota's population is flatlined, and we're seeing a 41% increase in state government finance spending. This is the definition of unsustainability, and it's not an accident. It's being done by design. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I just would just reiterate some words that we use, and I apologize for talking after Representative Garofalo. But I heard the Chair Cleburne talk about just investment over the last 20 years. And I don't think that we ought to consider disinvestment when we have a lessening of staff or even plateauing of staff or reduction in costs. All of us would like to increase our standard of living, and we do that through increased productivity, meaning we do more with less. And I don't think that should mean that there's disinvesting and that we're actually providing less service to the public just because, for heaven's sake, government can do it cheaper. That's not the point. The point is that we oftentimes should be expecting, as citizens, should be expecting the government should become more and more efficient with providing the services to us, not just saying, well, we're going to throw more money at it because that's easiest. This is a time for us to actually challenge ourselves, and I don't think we ought to be using the word disinvestment just because we have decided that we could do it cheaper or better with less people. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, I'll go to Representative Cleburne for the final word on her bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I would like to begin with a thank you. I would like to thank all of our excellent staff who helped put this bill together and the state employees who have provided the information and input for this bill in their hard work. And I would also like to thank Lee Nash. He and I have not always agreed on everything, but we have had a good working relationship. So I would say thank you to him. And with that, members, it's a great bill. It goes a long way to helping bring our systems back to where they need to be, and I ask for your yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. So we'll do a series of motions now to merge the state government and elections budget bills. So, Representative Freiberg, would you move that the language contained in House File 1723 as amended be incorporated into the state government and elections budget bill as separate articles?
So moved.
Any discussion to the motion before us? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion is adopted. Representative Cleavorn, would you move that the language in House File 1830 as amended be incorporated into the State Government and Elections Budget Bill as separate articles?
So moved.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no.
No.
So now we have the two bills, the motion prevails and we have the two bills merged. So Representative Cleavorn renews her motion that House File 1830 as amended be placed on the general register and that nonpartisan staff be directed to make technical changes as necessary. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. And so the last bill on the agenda for today is House File 2887, Representative Hornstein, the Transportation Finance and Policy Budget Bill. So Representative Hornstein, good to see you. And you, Representative Hornstein, moves that House File 2887 be placed on the general register. So would you like to walk through the bill and then take up amendments or take up amendments? We have four amendments. I defer to you on how you'd like to handle that.
Madam Chair, we could maybe do the walk through the bill and then we can do the amendments once people have a little bit more context for what we're doing.
That sounds great. So why don't you proceed then, Representative Hornstein?
Well, thank you, members, and thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing House Hall 2887. That is the 2023-2024 biennial transportation budget bill. And just to review, our committee has jurisdiction over MnDOT, the Metropolitan Council, and the Department of Public Safety's transportation-related budget and accounts. These include driver and vehicle services, Office of Safety, transportation safety, pipeline safety, and the State Patrol, among others. And so the budget here is really responding to some very, very significant needs in the transportation arena that have piled up over many years. And so I'll just start by saying that our committee examined those needs very early on in the process in January. And when MnDOT came, they noted that by the year 2030, 10% of our roads in the state of Minnesota will be in poor condition. So think about that. When we are traveling our roads today, we see many, many problems, particularly, you know, now the pothole issue has sprung up again. This is certainly a function of the normal freeze-thaw cycle. And it is, you know, the result of a particularly rough winter. But imagine this goes beyond the normal freeze-thaw cycle, members. We're talking about 10% of our roads in a short 7-year span will be looking a lot like the roads we're driving today. That is unacceptable. That is unacceptable to promote our economy. That is unacceptable for safety. That is unacceptable for our quality of life. And so this bill makes substantial investments to improve our road and bridge infrastructure. The Association of Civil Engineers put out a report card recently, which rated Minnesota's roads, gave it a grade of D+, our transit systems a C-, our bridges a C. So the last time that we had a significant bill to provide new revenue into the system was in 2008. There was a bipartisan override of Governor Pawlenty's veto of the then transportation bill that was authored by my mentor, Representative Bernie Leader of blessed memory. And that was a modest increase in the gas tax and a metro sales tax. Very much compromised from the original version. Before that, the only other time we had new revenue was in the 1990s. So this is why we have these incredible needs that have piled up over many years. And the many projects that members from both sides of the aisle would like to see in their districts, they don't go away, they just get more expensive. So now is the time for a very significant investment in our transportation system to catch up with all of these cascading needs. And so let's start in terms of the finances in this bill. The general fund target we received was $1,075,000,000, one-time money. Keep in mind that one-time money, while welcome and important, doesn't address these long-term needs. Transportation, unlike other budget areas, is reliant on dedicated funding. And so we don't normally have general fund money, although we will have some in the future, thanks to Representative Petersburg's bill, which I'll talk about in a minute. But this $1 billion plus one-time money, three-quarters of it goes for two very significant areas where we are matching historic levels of federal money that were passed in the IIJA bill. That was the federal infrastructure, bipartisan infrastructure bill, passed and signed into law in November of 2021. The most significant federal investment in public infrastructure since the Eisenhower Interstate Highway System. Got some problems with the interstate highway system, but nonetheless, that was the last significant federal investment on par with what we had in 2021. And then the one prior to that was the New Deal. So members, you've got the New Deal, you've got the Eisenhower investment in interstate highway system, and you have the bipartisan IIJA bill passed in November 21. To access that federal money in Minnesota, we need to invest state money to access that federal money. So $554 million in this bill go for a federal match. We'll be getting $7.8 billion out of that, and that will go for roads and bridges and some electric vehicle infrastructure as well. And we are providing technical assistance to local governments in this bill so they can write the grants to access that money. Thanks to Representative Cagle's work in the Sustainable Infrastructure Committee. Secondly, we have the second major investment in the general fund allocation is the NLX train to Duluth, where we are going to be accessing hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money to complete that line. So we have an allocation of one-time general fund money for that. Other items are mainly for agencies and keeping up with some of their needs, some new initiatives, for example, in traffic safety. We have had record numbers of fatalities in recent years on our roadways. Safety is a very key part of this bill. So now let's get to the new revenue. Those of you who have been on this committee in the past, there are some familiar items in terms of our revenue raisers, but some new and different and I think significant ways in which we're raising money. So to the familiar items, we have a tab fee, license tab fee increase, and that goes exclusively to roads and bridges. We do not have a gas tax this year. We had one in 2019 and in 2021. We're going a different direction because the gas tax is a declining source of revenue, and we want to look at something that has potential for the future, that is new, that is innovative. And we have a delivery fee on products that are delivered to people's homes, 75 cents per delivery, thanks to Representative Cagle, who's worked very, very hard on that bill, has addressed a number of the concerns that interested parties have had with this. That bill will not be implemented for a while. I think it's Representative Cagle can correct me, but we have a delay in implementation of that so that we can work some of the other issues out, and we have an amendment related to that as well. We have a metro sales tax, which is higher than we've had before. We've had a half-cent metro sales tax in this committee. It's a three-quarter-cent sales tax now. Half of that new increment goes to roads and bridges in the seven-county metro area, and then the other additional eighth of a cent will fund some of the new programs that we are looking at, new transit projects that we're looking at, future-facing transit projects that we are list in the bill, things like microtransit. How do we get that last mile after someone has taken public transportation? How do we get them to their final destination over that last mile or two? The southern suburbs have pioneered this microtransit program, which we are funding in this bill, and we'll have an amendment with some specific amounts later. Arterial bus rapid transit, shoring up the local bus system. These are some of the things that our metro sales tax will use. We can make no better investment to address climate change and equity than investments in public transportation. Nothing lifts people out of poverty better than access to jobs. We had someone at a public hearing say, what good is a job if you can't get there? This investment will help in that. Finally, we have an adjustment. We've had this in the bill in the past. The sales tax for cars is lower than the sales tax for other products or other items that people purchase. So we raised that from 6.5% to 6.875% for purchase of a new car. That also goes to roads and bridges, as well as Greater Minnesota Transit in this bill. So those are the major features in terms of the finances of this bill. And I would be happy to, Madam Chair, if you'd like to answer and have me answer questions, or if you want to take the amendments now, I'm open to however you would like to proceed with the committee.
Okay, great. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I think we'll do the amendments and then we'll move to member discussion after we have the amendments. So the first amendment I have here is the A32.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So this relates to actually a bill that I introduced, House File 2700. We did have some specific amounts for microtransit in that bill, we now have identified, I think, more clearly the funding source will not be general fund, but from the metro sales tax. And so we're putting those specific amounts back in. And so we give money to Minnesota Valley Transit and Southwest Transit for this new microtransit program that will build out, again, those last couple of miles. The Southwest suburbs, southern and west Southwest suburbs have done really, I think, national level work in pioneering this new transit mode, and this is what this goes for. And it just clarifies some earlier work we did in the committee. So I'd ask for your support. I'd move that A32 amendment.
Discussion to the A32 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the A32 amendment is adopted. Now on to the A33 amendment. Representative Hornstein, would you like, move the A33 amendment?
So thank you, Madam Chair and members. As I mentioned, climate is a very important piece of this bill. Transportation is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. Representative Kraft has introduced the bill that we've heard. And he has continued to work with different interested parties as the processes move forward. And this amendment is a result of his work with MnDOT on how the greenhouse gas emissions will be assessed in the bill. I appreciate, again, Representative Kraft's ongoing work. He's here to answer questions, but I believe, again, we heard this bill very thoroughly in our committee as well as in state government. And Representative Kraft is now trying to finalize some of the agreements he's made with different interested parties.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. So the A33 amendment discussion, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, this amendment, so is it going to measure over a period of time how much greenhouse gas emissions have either increased or decreased? Is that what this amendment is intended to do?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Representative Scott. Yes, what we are doing in the broader underlying bill that's included in this in House File 2887 is to find ways in which we can plan communities and transportation projects in a way that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Representative Scott, thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know how greenhouse gas emissions technically, I don't know how they're exactly measured. I'm not an expert on that, but let's say that there's no marked decrease in greenhouse gas emissions after 10 years of all these new policies and different things that are happening in the transportation bill. What then?
Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you. That's an excellent question, Madam Chair and Representative Scott. I think the experience we've had over the years and studies that have been done, that if we address this issue by changes in land use, which is the point of Representative Kraft's underlying bill, by much more people adopting and looking at public transit and active transportation options, and also adoption of electric vehicles. If we do those three things, we will have a significant drop in greenhouse gas emissions. There could be reasons why that strategy won't succeed, but you know what? That is the evidence. That is the evidence, and it makes common sense that if you're using a transportation system that emits less, you're going to have less greenhouse gas emissions. And if we're going to make an impact on climate, we've done a good job through the 100% bill, other activities we've done in the electric utility section, buildings, for example. We heard a lot from Representative Akam's excellent bill that we heard yesterday on buildings. But we haven't really done the work on transportation, and that is the number one source. So I'm very, very confident that this bill will make a significant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Scott. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, I'm not sure I heard an answer in there. What if
the answer is yes, we will reduce greenhouse gas emissions in this bill.
Representative Scott. Madam Chair, that wasn't my question, Representative Hornstein.
Well,
my question was, if after we do all these things and invest all these taxpayer dollars in making all these changes, if after all of this there's not a measurable decrease in greenhouse gases, what then?
Representative Hornstein.
Well, we're going to have to, that's a theoretical question, and I guess what I would answer is that we would have to really redouble our efforts to find out, what strategies work, what strategies don't work, and do them. Because really, the scientists tell us we have very little time to avert, I think, a very major, we're already in a climate crisis, but it is growing, it is deepening, it is expanding. And I think your 10-year time frame, Representative Scott, is a good one. I think we should assess this in 10 years. But we would have to really, evaluate, analyze, again, what strategies have been working, what haven't, and then redouble our efforts to get this work done, because it is absolutely critical for our planet. And I will say that when we address climate change, there's a fiscal piece to this too. Billions and billions and billions of dollars are spent mitigating the impacts of climate change. So from a fiscal standpoint, we're in a fiscal committee, we really better get our arms around this.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to this, Mr. Chair, do you believe that this assessment, impact assessment, will have veto power over a particular project? In other words, if it says that it's going to produce a little bit more or the same amount of greenhouse gases, that then it would be able to derail a particular project?
Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg, I think the idea here, and this is what Representative Kraft has been working through with the interested parties, is how does it change a project? How does it alter a project? How do we, make sure that this criteria is included when we look at some of these new, particularly larger expansion projects. I could have Representative Kraft come. I believe he's here. You know, maybe able to answer that a little bit better. I've been holding off on calling him, but it's a good question, Representative Petersburg, and maybe we should have the author of the underlying bill address that.
Okay, great. So, how difficult this is, but we love seeing you, Representative Kraft, and we're happy you're here to answer this question. So, do you want to take a crack at Representative Petersburg's question?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Representative Petersburg, the question was, is there veto power over a specific? The way this is set up to work is that MnDOT would look at a capacity expansion project, and the first effort would be to try to, and if that was going to result in increased emissions, say from increased uses of cars, right, that they would try within the project to mitigate. So maybe it's by adding a bus lane or some active transportation. If they're not able to within that specific project, there's a path where they can then use look at other projects that are in the region or even across the state. So it starts from the premise that we need to reduce emissions. It really is not an option to not reduce them, and gives the maximum flexibility to be able to do so.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and which kind of leads to the question, you know, how do we determine does this language actually allow for more of those mitigation pieces? Because sometimes expansion projects are actually the benefit of safety reducing cars at other intersections as well, not necessarily between that particular one. And so when you take that particular project and identify its emissions and so forth based upon that particular project itself, aren't you precluding the impact that it may have around it and what could be there, and whether or not safety is the primary factor in this particular situation rather than emissions? Or are you all saying that it always has to be emissions is the goal for us to be dealing with?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, I'm Representative Petersburg. So the issue you talked about if it improves things at other intersections, that's within the project within the region. So I believe that would be able to be taken into account. This is for capacity expansion projects. If there's a reconstruction or something else for a safety issue that's not a capacity expansion, this language doesn't apply.
Representative Petersburg.
The last question from me, at least in this particular section, is what do you anticipate as the increased cost for these projects having to go through all this particular assessment?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, it's a theoretical question, would be dependent on the specific project. I anticipate that over time this is a thing that will improve and reduce costs in the long term. So,
Representative Petersburg.
Okay, I guess I guess we've heard that before, where we're just going to add more work to people and all of a sudden it's going to become cheaper. This particular assessment is not something you just plug into a computer and it's done for you. I mean, you've got to do the extra work. You've got to have extra personnel to do that. And depending on how extensive the project is, I could see this could add 4 or 5% onto the project alone just for this assessment. And so I wish you well in that project of trying to get it done for no cost. But I disagree there, Madam Chair.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I want to focus in on lines 1.12 of the amendment here. So, because we've been talking about highway traffic capacity, but it says or provides grade separation at an intersection. And so I have a couple of these projects, one at the very north end of the district I represent and one just north of that, where we're looking to do that. And so I have some of the same questions I think that Representative Petersburg has. Does this then trump safety? If we're doing this because we're going to make a safer intersection, can what we're adding here trump that, and we won't put in a safer intersection because somebody in MnDOT finds out that there's a more gas emissions because of this?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, so I'm not MnDOT, but I would say this is not intended to trump safety. This adds another factor within the analysis of a project, and so I don't believe that that's not the intention nor what it would do.
So which one of these...
Representative Barnes.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Which one of these factors do we give more weight to?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, you know, I would say there... These are factors within a project. I think MnDOT probably has multiple factors within projects that they deal with today. And so I think there would be things that would be worked through. So I think we need MnDOT to say how they would actually implement this.
Representative Farr.
I guess I thought we were telling MnDOT what to do here, not the other way around. But I have the same question then. So Chair Hornstein said transportation promotes economic growth. Completely agree. Same question. If this is promoting economic growth in the area, is this which one is a higher factor? Which one is going to trump each other?
Representative Kraft.
I can take that. Maybe I was. Thank you, Matt. You know, we have there are a number of programs that MnDOT has. You referenced commerce, so we have something called Corridors of Commerce. Safety is an issue. There's about 8 or 9 different criteria. Actually, we amend, we have a Representative Torkelson provision here that amends some of the regional balance on the Corridors of Commerce bill. But we also have a new initiative around safety, and there's lots of criteria listed. So it's, you know, there are, each project has different weighting factors that MnDOT uses. And so we're simply saying this should be a factor in the weighting. And I think that's important. And you know, these the criteria we use for funding projects has evolved over time. You know, safety wasn't always an issue, commerce wasn't always an issue, and so we're adding another one. And but that we take that on a project by project basis, and MnDOT has multiple criteria, and so we're just really, I think, in a sense, through Representative Kraft's efforts, adding another one. I don't think we're not vetoing any project, but we're acknowledging the fact that the climate should be a factor in these evaluating some of these projects. That's really the simple answer.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So last question then. So Chair Cleburne said in her comments earlier, anytime we can save Minnesotans time, that's a good thing. So if we can save Minnesotans time and we can promote commerce, and we can make a safer intersection, do you envision any way that this could trump that project?
Well, thank you. First of all, Madam Chair, thanks for naming, I think, 3 of the key areas of this bill that are important. And of course, transit is also a way we save people time as well. You know, again, I don't think that one criteria trumps another. They're taken collectively and weighted collectively on a project-by-project basis. That's how MnDOT goes about this. And, you know, look, there's a whole evaluation process that goes. You know, you do a corridor study. You do preliminary engineering. There is a lot of public engagement throughout these processes. And then, you know, you come up with a plan. We have this all over the state, the kinds of projects that you're talking about. And a lot of them are, like, a turning lane. Right? So many crashes take place, or when lanes go from 2 to 4. We're chock full of these things. But what I want to emphasize, members, is that we're just adding really another criteria among many criteria. And so it's important. It's what we have to do in this moment in the 21st century. And I appreciate Representative Kraft's efforts on this, and he's worked with a lot of different stakeholders and will continue to do so.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I understand we're adding another criteria, and my main concern is what are we going to do with it? And so I'm good, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Naiman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I remember hearing this in State Government Finance, and memory does not necessarily serve me at the moment. Perhaps the Chair could clarify. I think that bill is still in possession of the committee. I'm not sure we moved it out, but one of my principal concerns is on line 3.5 through 3.8 of this amendment. And it's in my estimation, in my opinion, it is predisposing land use studies to being suppressed based on some of the expected outcomes of this study, Chair Hornstein. So it says land use including but not limited to residential or other density increases, mixed use development, and transit oriented development. So residential and mixed use density. The way I heard this in committee was if it was determined that the way a city were interested in developing land inside of its borders was incongruous with what this is trying to accomplish, that it could be shut down. And I think that's kind of what Representative Farr was just alluding to. Former mayor, and I know there's several former mayors and council members here, this strips away local control of those municipalities by saying, well, if we don't like the way your land use is proposed in your next comprehensive plan, and Representative Kraft did actually mention having a comp plan, that in your line 3.7, a mitigation action, which means we're going to change your project for you. That's what that means. That's what happens. So this is a very wide and encompassing amendment. And I don't remember, again, seeing any cost in this. So it's policy being added in to the bill here in Ways and Means. But again, I am very troubled by line 3.5 through 3.8, that it is setting it up so that an organization, Chair Hornstein, much like you and I share some frustration with, that has a lot of heavy-handed control, that I believe you're going to bring a bill to perhaps change their paradigm. We're now giving an organization, perhaps them or somewhere else, that same level of control to do this greenhouse impact study. So please tell me, Chair Hornstein, that I'm dead wrong on that, because I don't believe I am, because we did talk about it in state government finance, that is a potential change that could be offered to cities or demanded of cities.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, so first of all, just to your very first question on process, the bill was heard and passed through state government, and then we took it back and incorporated in the bill. So the two committees of jurisdiction have heard this, and I will ask Representative Kraft to address the two lines that you're most interested in hearing from.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash. So this language, the way this amendment was done, in some ways it was kind of a DE on the language that was in there. So the vast majority of this language was in the bill that you heard. There was two parts of that language relative to MnDOT and the Met Council portion, the comprehensive plan piece. I think you may be confusing those two. This MnDOT portion has not changed since then, and does not. This is relative to capacity expansion projects with MnDOT. So if you have specific other things in this land use language that you'd like to suggest, I'm open to that.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I didn't hear a yes or a no to whether or not that the expected outcome would be that land use development could be changed without the cities really having an opportunity to have local control.
Oh.
And Chair Hornstein, this is ultimately your bill. So
I'm happy to answer that.
Yeah. So that's the disturbing part, Madam Chair, is that a potential outcome seems to be written on the way in that in a there's a veto power given to somebody that may say to the city of Waconia, where I used to serve as mayor and now represent, or the city of pick a place, because your land use does not conform to our expected outcome, Chair Hornstein, that we're going to now have veto power on that project.
I can't take that one, Madam Chair. So similar to the line of questioning we had about, the possible case of a highway intersection. Local control is maintained because this is just really looking at, again, adding a criteria to a comprehensive planning process. So we're not taking away local comprehensive planning. I think you were the mayor of Waconia, and so you know how important these comp plans are. And so no one is going to say to usurp the power of a local government. But again, we're just saying that this needs to be part of the mix when you're doing a comprehensive plan.
And Representative Nash.
Lastly, Madam Chair, well, When I was mayor, there were projects that we were told that were not going to be greenlighted because they were incongruous with the overall plan. So my concern will be maintained. I can guarantee you there will be some amendments on the floor for this effort.
I would expect nothing less, Madam Chair.
But this is not benign language, Madam Chair, and I would encourage a no vote, and I would request a roll call on this particular amendment.
There will be having a roll call requested. There will be a roll call on the A33. Further discussion, Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair, and I believe this will be directed towards Representative Kraft. I'm confused. I think my impression was that we were here on a transportation bill, and I didn't think we were hearing an environmental bill. My question is the goal of the Department of Transportation and the Transportation Committee and this bill to provide the safest, cleanest, fastest, best use of taxpayer dollars? Or is it an environmental plan? Is it the goal of transportation to provide the least what one party considers to be most environmentally tolerable plan that they can get passed without there being too much pushback? So which is it? We either do one or the other. Are we doing the best, cleanest use of the dollars, or are we worrying about what we can get passed with the environmental conditions? And I ask this because if we're going to start talking about looking at miles driven and reduction and all these things, is that really the job of the state to decide? It's a monopoly, no different than the power company. You have to have your electric provided by one power provider, and then they'll tell you you're using too much electricity for what we feel you should be using. We add all these extra monies, all these measurements. The government's providing a service that they monopolize, and then they tell us we can be controlled, or you got to cut down on this gas, or we're going to take further actions. So my question, and I'll restate it, is the goal of the is this a transportation bill, or is it an environmental bill? Thank you.
I'll take that.
Representative Bernstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I wanted to take that. I know you had said, asked Representative Kraft, but because you had referenced the Transportation Committee and MnDOT and the overall goals of the bill, I wanted to just thank you, first of all, for the question, because it's really all of the above. All of the things that you mentioned are important in transportation, and I said those at the top of my presentation. Safety, economic vitality, mobility, equity, and the environment and climate. If transportation is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions, it needs to be addressed in a transportation bill. So MnDOT has a whole department, if you will, or a whole a deputy commissioner who's involved in, you know, how do we make transportation more sustainable? It is part and parcel of their work. It cuts across many different government agencies. The governor has a climate cabinet, for example. So the issue of climate really is very intersectional in terms of how we are approaching really one of the, you know, the existential crisis of our time, climate change. And so there is a commitment on the part of every agency, including MnDOT, to address this in one form or another. And I think it's particularly important in transportation because, as I said before, it is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. So, yes, we have a portion of the bill that addresses it. Studies have shown that land use, public transportation, electrification of our infrastructure, adoption of electric vehicles are the top three strategies we can use in transportation to address greenhouse gas emissions. We do that in the bill. This is the land use portion of that bill.
Representative Novotny, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Chair.
And I think you're getting at the problem, and that you're restating, I think we agree that this, it's more of an environmental bill than transportation, and I'll just end with this. When we were starting to build our family, my wife and I would go to, you know, pick out the strollers, and you can go to the baby section and you can pick out the stroller that's also be able to be converted to a walker and an easel. And I always had the saying with her that if it tries to do more than one thing, it does none well. And I think that is my biggest objection with the transportation budget. We have an environmental committee, we have an environmental section. I think we're not doing anything well. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there someone here from MnDOT that could come to the table for a couple of questions? I think to Representative Farr's question and so forth, I just would like some clarity on what is a priority in their projects and how, if this amendment goes on and this becomes law, how that list of priorities would be affected.
Yes, it looks like we do have somebody from MnDOT.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir. If you could just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And I think, as was discussed earlier, it's important to realize which projects this language would apply to. There is a definition in the language of capacity expansion projects. And so, most of the work that we do is maintaining the existing system, repaving or rehabilitating bridges. This language would not apply to those types of projects. So for those expansion projects, we would have to go through this analysis and look at projected greenhouse gas emissions. There are ways identified in the bill to mitigate. Some of those things would be under the department's control. Other mitigation elements are under local government control, so I think we'd have to coordinate with local governments on those mitigation initiatives or transit providers, for example. The language is something we're still sort of analyzing, and we would have to figure out how to implement it. At our request, the effective date has been pushed out to 2025, so we would have some time to sort of set up a process and implement that, determine how to get this new language enacted.
Thank you, Mr. Radin. Representative Scott, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I sure do. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your, I think, very honest answer. Basically, you're saying we don't really know how this is going to be implemented, what kind of effect it's going to have. But I do have concerns, like at 1.12, where it says adds highway traffic capacity or provides for grade separation. Highway 10, as you know, up in Anoka County, is a work in progress, and one of the main reasons is there's an at-grade problem there because we have railroads that run parallel to the highway, making it very difficult to get emergency vehicles and so forth across both the highway and then the rail separation. So in a project like that, how would you see this piece of legislation being overlaid in as far as a priority? Would the number of traffic accidents be a heavier weight, or would this be just as heavy a weight or more so?
Mr. Radin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think all of those factors would be, you know, included as we develop a project. And so, you know, projects do have various criteria that sort of push them to the top. Certainly traffic safety is one of them. You know, if a project starts as a traffic safety project, but the proposed alternative is to construct an interchange, then obviously this language would kick into effect, and we would have to go through this analysis and determine what the impacts of the project would would be over the 20-year period on greenhouse gas emissions. And if it was determined that it would lead to increased GHG, then, you know, there are the mitigation factors identified in the bill that we would have to work on before the project could proceed.
Representative Scott, one more follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So let's say that, you know, we have this really dangerous grade separation issue, and now this is law, and this would have to be what in this bill would be taken into consideration in a situation like that that would impact that final project? What kind of things would be done if this were to become law to mitigate greenhouse gases in a project like that?
Mr. Ridium.
And then, Madam Chair, and if I might, would that add cost to the project from MnDOT's perspective?
Mr. Ridium.
Thank you. So, you know, there are several mitigation actions laid out, including, for example, a increased transit service in the corridor. And so, as I stated earlier, you know, some of those things might be under MnDOT's control. Others we would have to work with in the metro area, the Met Council or the local transit provider, for example. So our piece of the project might be to construct, you know, transit facilities in the corridor, but then the actual transit service would be provided by whoever that local transit provider is in the area. So, you know, I think that it kind of remains to be seen what the impact on projects will be as this is implemented. But it's certainly a direction that we're moving already. You know, as we go in and do projects, we always look at if there are bike ped facilities that can be added to the project, if that's, you know, something that's needed in the local area. Transit service would be another thing that we look at. So I would say some of these things we're sort of trying to implement already as we develop projects.
Thank you, Mr. Rudy. We appreciate you coming up here. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Rudine, one quick question, too. And it's been a long time since I've been on transportation, but from what I remember in my time on City Council, too, is when you do projects, you already do an environmental impact statement or assessment. Is that accurate?
Mr. Rudine.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. We are required always to do some sort of environmental analysis. And so, you know, sometimes that's an environmental assessment worksheet for a smaller type project. If it's a large capacity expansion project, we're probably going to do a full-blown environmental impact statement as part of that project development.
Representative Joachim.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I know you are probably more of an expert on greenhouse gas and congestion than I am, but just a quick question. Does reducing congestion help reduce greenhouse gas? And just to say that this seems like just an expansion or an extension of an environmental impact statement that that one would do.
Mr. Rudy.
Madam Chair, I think that's true. You know, if you have significant congestion in a corridor and a project will result in reduced congestion, you can actually reduce greenhouse gas emissions if traffic is going from sort of a stop-and-go condition to, 30 miles an hour or higher. You can actually reduce greenhouse gas emissions, because if you're in that stop-and-go condition, that's usually when vehicles are emitting the most pollution.
Thank you, Mr. Redding. Representative Garofalo, you are the last on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, the cost of these assessments, does this come out of the MnDOT budget?
Representative Bernstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, there is a, you know, MnDOT has, you know, a whole set of steps that they use when they assess a corridor for funding. And so, yes, there are costs associated with planning and staffing and engineering these projects. And so those would be coming out of MnDOT's existing budget.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, does this provision apply to just state highways?
Representative Hornstein.
This provision, the MnDOT specific provisions would be in the state system.
Right, but Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, I look at page one, line 10, the definition of a major highway project. It references a section, subdivision, and paragraph of law. Is that just for trunk highways?
I'll phone a friend here. I believe that this would section 174.56, Representative Kraft. I have a sense of this, but I want to make sure that I'm accurate. He's asking, is this only for state highways?
Representative Kraft, or maybe a nonpartisan staff, Chair Bernstein. Yeah.
It could be maybe Mr. Lee will help us with this, or Mr. Burks.
I'm not off the top of my head familiar with that section of law, but I believe it's state. But
Mr. Burris.
Before we go to Mr. Burris, Madam Chair and Representative Kraft, shouldn't at a basic level before we're adopting an amendment, we should know what highways it's applying to? Shouldn't the author of the bill and the supporter of the amendment know which highways this applies to, or is that an unrealistic expectation?
Representative Garofalo, I think we're going to have Mr. Burris come down and answer the question.
Madam Chair,
I gave an answer, and we're verifying it.
And we're getting,
Representative
the answer for you, Representative
Garofalo. I gave an answer, and we're verifying it. Yes.
Right, Madam Chair, the authors don't know.
No, the authors know, and we're verifying it.
Okay.
Wait a second. Hold on. I have the floor. Not okay. Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, you have the floor.
Yes, I'm saying, would you want to, you have a question. Go finish your question.
I'm done with my question.
All right, well then let's go.
We get an answer, or is that not allowed under the rules?
Can
we get an answer?
I'm going to get you an answer.
Perfect.
Thank you. Mr. Burris, could you please join us? Mr. Burris, do you want the question restated, or are you set to go?
Madam Chair and members, Matt Burris with House Research. I think I'm following where the question is.
Madam Chair, Mr. Burris, just to be clear, the question was, does this apply to the which highways
Excuse
this apply
Representative
to?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair,
you
I want to make
rules
sure.
Here? No.
No, I'm restating the question.
Yes, when
which
I call
highways
on
does
you,
it apply to?
You go through the chair. You know that.
Okay, Madam Chair, the question is, which highways does this apply to?
Thank
I didn't
you.
Want him to answer the question of whether authors should know the answer to the question or not. So, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, this would apply to trunk highways with a project cost estimate. And that cost estimate amount depends on whether it's in the metropolitan district or outside. Inside the metropolitan district, it would be a $15 million threshold. And outside, so non-metropolitan, it's a $5 million threshold. That's the
Representative Garofalo, go ahead.
I think that covers it. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Garofalo, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it is, in reading that section of law, the 15 and the 5, do we know the origins of why there is this separation of triple the project cost requirement in the metro area versus non-metro area?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, my recollection is a bit hazy on when this provision was first enacted, but I think it had to do at the time of the context of that those cutoffs for when reporting was going to be required for a new report that was being established, and that's what that section of law creates. As I recall, that was viewed at the time as a threshold for what kind of information would the legislature would be interested in knowing about from a, you know, what projects to identify as ones that are kind of considered more major from a you know, kind of legislative interest standpoint.
Thank you, Mr. President. Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Hornstein, for those projects, I see that we picked out the effective date to 2015. For those projects,
2020, Madam Chair, 2025.
Yeah, 2025, I'm sorry. Yes, February 2025. Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, for those projects that are already in pre-design or design, would they be exempted from these requirements? As you know, the lead time in bidding on these is substantially longer than that time frame. Would they be exempted from that, or are they going to have to go back and retrofit these projects?
Chair Hornstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, no. The if they're in process, they would not be covered under this. This is the effective date is 2025.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I didn't mean to haze you in the chair. I just thought it was.
Well, Madam Chair, I want to thank Representative Garofalo, Madam Chair. I knew that this was the state system. I did not know about this 515, so that's very helpful, and thank you for your question.
Well, that's what, Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, that's why I'm here.
Okay, all right. A roll call being
Madam
requested.
Madam Chair?
Oh, you have a yes.
I simply want to ask, and I think that actually members on both sides of the aisle just violated the rule that all members should wait to be called upon before speaking. And actually, I think in this case, I will note, unfortunately, both Chair Hornstein and Lee Garofalo in that last exchange did not respect that. And I really would ask members just so we all can follow along, we all respect the rules, that we wait to be called upon before speaking every single time. And if I violate that, please stop me as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. It's like a back and forth here with no chairing. All right. A roll call, I have it being requested on the A3. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Olson. Just to restate, we're voting on the A33, correct?
A33.
Aye.
Yes. Olson, aye. Vice Chair Edelson.
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Lead Garofalo.
No.
Garofalo, no. Of Acom.
Aye.
Acom, aye. Representative Egbaje.
Aye.
Egbaje, aye. Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Gomez. Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Heintzman, no. Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Cleborn.
Cleborn, aye.
Cleborn, aye. Representative Crenshaw.
No.
Crenshaw, no. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly. Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Nash.
No.
Nash, no. Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny.
No.
Novotny, no. Representative O'Neill is excused. Representative Pulowski. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Farr?
No.
Farr, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
No.
Schumacher, no. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Joachim?
Yes.
Joachim, aye. Representative Gomez? Representative Lilly? And Representative Pulowski? Madam Chair, there are 15 ayes, 9 noes, and 4 excused.
There being 15 ayes and 1 nay, the motion prevails, and the 9 nays, 9 nays, and the motion prevails, and the title is agreed to, or the A33 is adopted.
Thank you, Vice Chair Edelson, for taking over and doing a good job in that moment. So I will trade back my name tag, and I will move the next amendment, which is the A34 amendment. And so I'll have Representative Hornstein move the A34 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is the standard grant management language that we're adding to all the budget bills, and would appreciate your support.
Any discussion to the A34? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A34 is adopted. And the next amendment is the A35 amendment. And so, Representative Hornstein, would you move the A35 amendment?
Yeah, the A35 amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair. The A35 amendment pertains to the delivery fee, which I referenced earlier in my introductory comments. This is coming out of some conversations I believe we had in the Tax Committee just to simply clarify the Department of Revenue's responsibilities. It doesn't at all change the structure of the fee. It also, you know, clarifies, again, we added some language around small business and small business accounting. So this was, I think, made at the request of members of the Tax Committee, and so we have that language before us now.
Great. Discussion to the A35 amendment. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, excuse me. And Mr. Chair, could you more in detail what those concerns that the Tax Committee had that this is correcting?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Petersburg. I think there was issues raised around how the Department of Revenue would, you know, be able to implement an account for the fee. Particularly, we had an amendment added in the Tax Committee that exempted some of the small businesses. So that's addressed here in the amendment. You know, those are really the main items here.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Chair, so the Department of Revenue, did they tell you how they were going to be able to track these various changes in small businesses? Because you've got retailer that has total sales less than a million, and then you got 100,000 in previous calendar year. Do they have the capacity and ability to be able to track that information without additional costs?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Petersburg. You know, they did testify briefly in the Tax Committee. I didn't detect any major impediments to their ability to manage them.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will talk more about this when we get into final passage, but thank you.
Further discussion to the A35. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is the first time I've seen this, but Representative Hornstein, is your understanding, because I see a reference here to on page 3, lines 1 and 2, there's a definition there for metropolitan area. Is this bill only applicable to deliveries within the metropolitan area? Or
no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Representative Scott. Thank you for flagging that. This also, there's some technical issues around the metropolitan sales tax. And the Department of Revenue's role here. So that is those are the sections prior to what you're reading on page 3. So sorry about that. I appreciate you raising that.
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So this bill does apply statewide. It's not just the metro area.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the delivery fee is statewide. The metropolitan area sales tax for transit is the 7-county metropolitan area. They're just kind of combined in this particular amendment.
Thank you.
Because it relates, again, to some implementation issues around the Department of Revenue. So they would have jurisdiction over both the delivery fee and the metro sales tax.
Further discussion. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, the exemptions 2.15 to 2.28, what was the purpose for those exemptions? What was the intent of them?
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, Representative Cagle is the author of the underlying bill. In her conversations with some of the business interests that contacted her about their concerns of the bill, and here in testimony we heard in committee, some of the smaller businesses felt that this would be an appropriate addition to the bill, and in fact, Colorado, which has a similar delivery fee, did exempt small businesses, but only, you know, after the bill was passed, they went back and did this exemption. We want to do it at the front end because it's reasonable and fair.
Madam Representative Garofalo. Representative Hornstein, what is the problem it's fixing, though?
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, some of the small businesses felt that there were some both accounting issues and administrative issues that would be potentially problematic. And then, you know, in terms of the volume of their business, it could impact that. We haven't seen evidence of that, but, you know, it is something that, you know, we want to be attentive and responsive to the interests of some of these small businesses.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, the $1 million threshold, is that to exempt a certain percentage of businesses? Is there something about that number? Why was the number $1 million chosen?
Thank you. I think that was thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo. Yes, I think that had to do with a particular threshold.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein. Is there anything about that number? Does that exempt a certain percentage of businesses? That's why it was chosen. Is there a threshold at which that we think those costs are going to be burdensome onto those businesses? Was the number plucked out of thin air? What is it about the $1 million number that makes it appropriate?
Representative Hornstein.
Again, I'm going to phone a friend here. Representative Cagle is the author of the underlying bill, and I think she can explain that better. Madam Chair.
Hi, Representative Cagle. Welcome to the committee, and I trust you heard the question, so please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo. It's already in statute that way.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, this is a new fee. How is that in statute?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reference to small businesses is already in statute.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the definition of, it says the fee imposed by this chapter and the requirements of this chapter do not apply to a retailer that made retail sales totaling less than $1 million in the previous calendar year. So this is a new section of law. Isn't this, is this the 168E05? Isn't this new?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. The fee is new. The reference to the $1 million under sales of $1 million is something I believe that is already in statute under small business, working with the tax nonpartisan staff and also industry. This is kind of where we landed.
Representative Garofalo.
So, Madam Chair, a question for you. So this amendment was drafted, looks like yesterday at 2:30. Is this amendment subject to an amendment?
It's the prerogative of the chair, and you would be offering a verbal amendment right now, is what you're saying?
Yes, Madam Chair.
You could, if you want to offer a verbal amendment to this bill, and you, why don't you can proceed with offering a verbal amendment.
Okay, so Madam Chair, the question was that because the amendment was stamped at 2:30, usually we have flexibility on that, but if we say it was outside of 24 hours, then it shouldn't be subject to an amendment. Just wondering, because this was under 24 hours, if I could, I look at the $1 million number, that's not adjusted for inflation. I know the DFL has wanted to take inflation into account and a lot of forecasts that perhaps we could index that number going forward. We can make it a bigger number to make sure that the burdens that are being exempted from those under $1 million, we could expand that to protect others. Representative Hornstein.
Representative Garofalo, I think I was pretty clear and we've been pretty flexible, and I said you could offer a verbal, so I did answer that question. If you'd like to proceed with a verbal amendment, you can.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, so I'm kind of making the case for a potential amendment here. Can we expand that so we have more small businesses that are protected from this fee?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is the language that the author of the underlying bill prefers and has vetted with many others, and so I would speak against the oral amendment.
Representative Garofalo, are you going to offer an oral amendment or not?
I'm not going. Now that I know that the highly respected chair of the Transportation Committee does not want to protect additional small businesses, I will not offer that amendment, Madam Chair.
Further discussion to the A35 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the A35 amendment is adopted. I believe we are all out of amendments, and so we have the bill as amended in front of us, so discussion to the bill. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, there's lots of new fees and so forth, and expanded fees in this bill. My question is, I have a 2012 Nissan Altima. Are my tab fees going to go up under this bill?
Representative Hornstein.
Your tab fees will go up, but at a very small rate because your car is over, is 10 years old approximately. I don't know when in the year you bought it, but we have a much, much lower threshold for tab fee increases for cars of your age.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm concerned, Representative Hornstein, because if this bill is trying to be more equitable to folks that are lower income, a lot of folks with lower incomes drive older cars, and I see this as increasing their costs going forward, and that concerns me. I think there are other issues in this bill that are going to also disproportionately hurt people of lower incomes, because I think there's just going to be so much more expense going into our whole transportation system. And I wonder too, Representative Hornstein, which do you think would reduce poverty more, a train line to Duluth or reducing bus fares?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Scott. First of all, I wasn't sure exactly when you bought your car. So I do want to say if it was, in fact, after 10 years, you're right on that threshold. So if it was after 10 years, you would actually be paying $5 less. So I did want to, if it was before 10 years, then you would have a slight increase. So I just wanted to put that on the record. The issue here is that all of our transportation systems are covered in this bill, all modes, all parts of the state. And so there are certain areas in which people of higher income benefit, people of lower income benefit. There are many people that may not own a car. So they have now an option to go to get to Duluth. The pilot project that you referred to, of course, will also impact people of lower incomes, because we know that when you have lower reduced fares, ridership increases and people are able to get to their jobs. People are able to do their grocery errands. People are able to get to school. And so, again, I think that the word I would use to describe this bill is comprehensive. It is statewide. Every Minnesotan will benefit.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think there are a lot of fees in here that are disproportionately going to hurt people of low income. Just the delivery fee alone of 75 cents. I'm wondering, Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, I don't know if you need to ask the author of that bill or not, but how did you arrive at 75 cents, which is the highest delivery fee in the nation at this point?
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I think that the fee was arrived at by really looking at some of the needs that we have in our transportation system. And we have significant needs here in Minnesota. We have the fifth largest road system in the country. That's not per capita. That's in miles. As I said at the beginning, it is deteriorating because we have not made the necessary investments. So we're calibrating this based on how we can get to the need to address this growing and significant issue. And I'll also add, since we're talking about the delivery fee, you know, there's a lot of concern about the 75 cents. You know, there are a lot of entities now that are charging so much more than that for delivery. You know, Hy-Vee, Lunds, I've got a whole list here, which I can share with you. But Hy-Vee, for example, many of these deliveries set their fee at $9.95. So this is something that people are paying for. And I'm not going to guess at the accounting that the grocery industry does, but they're already paying almost $10 per delivery. We're adding 75 cents for our road and bridge infrastructure. So that's, again, people will be impacted, yes, but they're already spending a lot of money. And, you know, DoorDash, all sorts of fees already imposed. So we're just simply adding this because it is a growing source of revenue. We had heard so many concerns about the gas tax. This is why we have the delivery fee, and I think this is the future. And this is something we can get behind. People are already paying for this, again, this modest allocation for our roads and bridges will go a long way in solving our transportation problem.
Representative Scott. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate your explanation, Representative Hornstein. People have a choice whether to shop at Hy-Vee and pay that fee or not. They're not going to have a choice on a government-imposed fee whatsoever. A person could obviously drive to Hy-Vee for cheaper, most likely, or just their local grocery store, and then they wouldn't be paying that fee. But if they want to order something from Amazon from far, far away, then it's gonna cost them. But Representative Horstein, I you know like and respect you, if you know that, and I just think this is a wrong approach to transportation. I think there's no restraint in it, and that causes me concern. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Hornstein. I've worked with you for many years now, and you and I share the same passion for transportation, and I think we also share the same passion for additional funding for our roads and bridges. I think that funding is kind of also where we start deferring into where the money comes from. But, Madam Chair, if I could ask somebody from Met Council to come forward for some questions. Over half of these new dollars, tax increases, are going to Met Council, and I think it's important for us to know, you know, what the plan is for those that is not real clear in the bill. So if somebody from Met Council could come forward, I'd sure appreciate answering a few questions.
Great. Looks like we have someone coming forward here. Hi, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetnan. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. So thanks for having me this morning.
Great. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Shetnan, so when the Met Council asked for this 0.75% sales tax, what plans did you have? What were the deficiencies that you needed to fulfill with this these new taxes?
Mr. Shetnan.
Well, Madam Chair and members, Representative Petersburg, just to be clear, that the Metropolitan Council has a recommendation of a 1/8-cent sales tax for the metro area for transit. That is the governor's recommendation. The governor has mentioned that he is open to discussing a larger amount. And so to be clear, that we are moving forward with a 1/8-cent sales tax. But as far as what we're trying to address here, we have a existing structural deficit that has existed in the transit system in the metro area for many, many years. And one of the things that I appreciate about Representative Hornstein and his bill is that this funding will allow us to begin to address that structural deficit. I would be happy to let Representative Hornstein speak to how the funding will be spent in his bill, but on the bottom of page 59, the top of page 60, there is a list of basically a menu of items that we have to spend these funds on related to the transit system. And it's all from the e-bus system to replace transit shelters, for capital operating funds related to the ABRT system. So there's a long list of items that can be, or that need to be funded with a portion of the sales tax on an annual basis. So hopefully that helps answer your question, Representative Petersburg.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that's getting there. I appreciate that. Also, in regards to that, we know that this particular new spending in this bill, Department of Public Safety is going to have somewhere around 150 to 160 new FTEs. The Department of Transportation is 146 to 173, depending on the year. And it's been difficult getting out some numbers. I think just within the last few hours, there has been some indication from the Met Council staff that could be as little as 30 FTEs with all this new dollars. Do you have any updated figures for us on how many FTEs these new dollars will be generating?
Mr. Shutman.
Madam Chair and members and Representative Petersburg, we did have a conversation with Andy Lee, fiscal analyst, about this, and I'm just going to start with talking a little bit again about our structural deficit. And then I'll get to your question. So we have nearly a $300 million structural deficit in our transit system beginning in fiscal years 26 and 27. That will continue to grow into the future. And so we know that if these funds were to pass, that we would be using those funds just to fund our existing system as it is. And then we get to the list of items that are that we have to use a portion of the sales tax on an annual basis. Well, there are both operating costs there and there are capital costs there. So it's very difficult to prescribe a specific number to how we would be, how many FTEs we would be adding based on that. And so I'm not trying to be elusive here, but I'm also trying not to speculate. And I would say that when we look at ABRT lines, that we generally would be adding staffing of in the one to two dozen, because ABRT lines replace oftentimes where existing services. But there are a number of things that can be done here, and there's also funding for the suburban transit providers. And I don't want to speak to how they would be spending those funds and how many FTEs they would have, but how the bill lists what the funds can be used for, since it does say that it can be used for both capital and operating, again, it is, I don't want to speculate, but we do know that we would be using it for many of those purposes here.
Representative Petersburg.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think I have three questions for Mr. Shetton left. One is around that very question. What do you have a ballpark figure on how much of the dollars that will be coming your way are more discretionary versus specific?
Mr. Shetnan.
Well, Madam Chair and members, the way that the bill reads, it really does speak to having to use a portion of these funds on the 11 items that are listed on the top of page 60. And so, but on the bottom of page 29, it says it is not limited to those 11, but we must use it for those. Again, I want to just add that I think it may be better for Representative Hornstein to maybe speak to some of that, but we would absolutely follow the law and use it on these for these purposes. But I also want to restate that a large portion of this will be going to address our structural deficit and a fiscal cliff that we've been talking about with the legislature for many years, and that will be where the first call will go in order to really be able to stabilize the system that we have currently. So, Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg, I know you're looking for some specificity here. I apologize, I'm not able to provide that, but the way that this is written in a way that it provides for other multiple ways for it to be funded, it's just really difficult to be able to give you a hard and fast number on that.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. The next question revolves around the funding for construction and others. This bill actually gives Met Council, which is an unelected body, the ability to bond with those new dollars. What is the council's plans for bonding? What kind of debt service are they planning on doing? Could you enlighten us with that? Because that seems a kind of a dangerous premise.
Mr. Shetnan.
Madam Chair and members, Representative Petersburg, we are just going through the legislative process here and working with the legislature on this. I can tell you the council hasn't made any plans on how we intend to finance using any of these sales tax funds up until we are in a position to be able to have these funds available. We are in the process where obviously the House is bringing forward their bill, the Senate's bringing forward their bill, and the governor has his position. And we look forward to working with Chair Hornstein and Senator Dibble in order to land a transportation funding bill, but we are not getting out in front of ourselves and made any determination on how we are going to finance with any of the potential new revenue that's provided in this bill.
Okay.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and the last question that I have for the Met Council is you know, I'm aware that there are a lot of studies going out there, and one of them that I was just made aware of indicates that Minneapolis metro area is looking at the largest business vacancy around for major cities, which kind of indicates that there is a change in people's behavior in regards to transit and some of the other things. How is that going to be impacting some of the plans that the Met Council might have with some of these funding? Because it seems like maybe we're putting in more dollars into something that may need to change into the future, and maybe we're got the cart before the horse.
Mr. Shetnin.
Well, Madam Chair and members and Representative Petersburg, thank you for the questions. I will say that the transit system has been impacted by the pandemic, but one thing I would like to share is that we do know that our ABRT system, the arterial BRT and local service, has been the most resilient of any of the service, and as well as Metro Mobility of any of the service. So when we see transit services rebounding, we really do see that those investments are paying off. This bill directs us to use a portion of those funds on ABRT investments, and I appreciate Representative Hornstein has always been a great leader when it comes to investing in our ABRT systems, and that's what we intend to do. I can't speak to what is happening as far as in the city of Minneapolis. I'm the wrong person for that, but we do know that our transit system is still necessary. We need to grow it. We need to invest in it, and I know that the council is very interested in that, and that the governor with his proposal is interested in that, and I'll let Representative Hornstein speak to his bill.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think I have any more questions for the Met Council. I do have a few more questions on the bill, if you want me to continue with that.
Sounds great, Representative Petersburg. We have about 25 minutes left.
All right, thank you. The next question revolves around the delivery tax. And I think, Mr. Chair, you talked about, well, these other people are charging $9.95 for delivery charge and so forth. But unless I'm wrong, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that $9.95 also includes gasoline taxes, license tab fees, other things that they must also have to pay that goes towards roads and bridges. And so there is already some fee for the roads and bridges that are coming out of that $9.95, and now we're adding the other 75 cents. Is that your recollection, or do you think they're not paying those other fees?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Well, actually, for Hy-Vee, it's $19.95 if you want quicker delivery. But, you know, the issue here is that, you know, there are certainly, Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg, you're absolutely correct. They pay a license tab fee for whatever vehicle they are using. They have to fill it up with gas. So there are expenses. You know, I don't know the accounting. I don't know what kind of cost center or profit center this is for these various entities. Obviously, they're making money because they wouldn't be doing it otherwise. It's not a service. I don't know how much of this is staff costs versus, you know, gasoline, et cetera. But you know, there is a profit in providing the service, and the delivery fee is something people could control. You know, versus the gas tax. That's one reason why I think we're looking at this new innovative system here. Because, you know, they can package. Representative Cagle talked about at the hearing that you can order more than one item at a time, for example, right? And so, you know, I think, again, this is going to impact people, but we are paying already, you know, a flat rate of $9.99 at Target. Whole Foods is $9.95. So people are already paying $10. And we're paying that additional amount of money because this is a transportation expense. There's a transportation nexus in delivery. And so this makes sense, I think, for many standpoints. It is an important new source of funding that we're going to use. And it's going to impact, it's going to help our roads. It's going to make our bridges safer. We have hundreds of fracture critical bridges, even after the Section 152 legislation that we passed in 2008. So let's really focus on what this is buying us. And I think this is a way that, that we can do this in a new and innovative way that will get the job done.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for the rest of the committee, the bill started out with 45 cent tax or delivery fee, and then it went to 75% or 75 cent delivery fee, and that included everybody, including the small businesses. And now, as you heard in the amendment, small business was kind of taken out of that whole picture of this piece. So there's been a lot of moving parts with this and the amount of dollars raised. I know that Colorado, that this has been made after, has some issues with it too that's going through. And so I'm guessing we're going to have a lot of work dealing with this into the future. It's an extremely regressive tax that I think is something that we don't consider. By the way, you will now be paying the 75 cents on clothing, even though you're not paying sales tax on it. So, you know, that's one of those things that's a concern. Going on to the next issue that I think has some real concern is what we're doing with passenger rail. As Mr. Chair mentioned, we are needing to invest in this train to Duluth because we can get hundreds of millions of dollars from the federal government. And I want to caution us a little bit about chasing after federal dollars, and I need to go no further than just talk about the special ed subsidy program through education, in which now we're dealing with the cross-subsidy issue because we chased after those federal dollars. And this is another example where the Duluth train, the dollars we're chasing after is building it out, not the subsidy after it's been built. And so it's a concern for me that we're trying to find these dollars for building it, but we still haven't figured out any way of limiting our exposure and risk for the building expense as well. In regards to that, we have an additional train analysis by a group that is going to be task force that's going to be including going out to Fargo, Moorhead area from Minneapolis, St. Paul. And underneath that, it's going to have the North Star commuter rail as part of its discussion. However, attempts to make that a little bit more realistic failed in transportation because that North Star, the only thing that the committee can discuss is whether you enhance it or maintain it. And I think there should have also been an opportunity for them to have determined whether or not it should be eliminated, especially if you're going to continue the train all the way out to Moorhead. You probably don't need to have both trains going, but that was not added to the bill, which I think was a big mistake. Because if you don't put all the cards on the table and you exclude some of them from being looked at, sometimes you miss a great opportunity, which I think is something that we have here. The last issue that I want to talk about this bill is just in regards to some of the greenhouse Met Council climate action planning requirements, et cetera, that are in this bill that are really going to become overbearing. There are going to be cities and townships that are going to have to put in hundreds and thousands of dollars in order to provide some of these particular action plan requirements for the Met Council that may or may not have any direct impact into the air quality itself, and even more so when it comes to land management, in which now some entity other than the city may be involved in developing how you're going to use your own land within the city. Those are all issues, and there'll be more that we'll be talking about on the floor, of course, but for all of those reasons, this bill is not one that I can support at this time. I think there are too many issues, and I will rely on others to talk more about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, excuse me.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if Mr. Stettman from Met Council can head back down, I believe we'll have to, just a couple questions. Representative Petersburg covered it very well, but I just have specific questions about the North Star line. You mentioned that you have existing structural deficits. How much of that is from North Star?
Madam Chair and members and representative, I will have to provide that to you. I will say that we have been funding our structural deficits in the last, in fiscal years 21 and 22 and 23 and 24 through federal funds that we have received, COVID-related funds. But we do have a structural deficit that is in both our bus and rail and in metro mobility. But I can get that for you very quickly. I just don't have it off the top of my head. I apologize.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. And last question for you, Mr. Stemmen. Any idea what the recovery rate or the, I believe they call it the pay box rate for North Star is right now?
Mr. Shetnin.
Madam Chair and members, I do. We have, I would say, and I mentioned earlier that the transit system has really taken it hard since the pandemic, and the North Star service in particular has suffered terribly. And we are the fare box recovery on the North Star line is, I have the numbers are the what have been audited are at 2% right now. So it is extremely low. We were at 16% back in 2017, 16% in 2018, 15% in 2019, and then when the pandemic hit, we dropped to 3% in 2020 and 2% in 2021.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Mr. Stepman. And Chair Hortstein, you had mentioned that, you know, these private businesses wouldn't do it if there wasn't a profit in it. And I'm going to tie it together with your previous statement about environment. We need to do things that are environmentally friendly. We are running a huge diesel train that is empty. I've got the numbers for February North Star in front of me. 309 rides a day. That's both ways. 105 persons a day are using that train for two trips a day. That's 50 people a train. Instead of taking a large diesel-powered locomotive back and forth to Minneapolis, is there any appetite for just sticking a fork in North Star and being done with that and replace it with a flexible, heck, you could even go electric buses for a fraction of the cost, and that would help with your global environmental goals and save millions and millions of dollars.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Novotny. I mean, yeah, I think there are, I will certainly agree with you that there's problems with North Star and ridership. Some of it's pandemic related. Much of it, of course, is pandemic related. But I think that we also have, I think there was a very poor planning decision made when this corridor was constructed. And to have it not go to St. Cloud, I think, was a huge, huge mistake and error. And I think that, you know, one of the provisions that we're looking at in this bill is, you know, how do we correct that error? I think that there would be significant changes in ridership patterns if we had completed that line to St. Cloud.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I used to sit and watch the bus from St. Cloud unload at the Big Lake Station pre-pandemic, and even then, four, maybe five people would get off on a good day, and we were running a large coach bus to go back and forth. And not only that, we had to have two of them going back and forth when they easily could have made the trip with one. We've got the coach buses. The infrastructure's there. When you're in a hole, quit digging. We can do this much better, much cheaper, and thank you.
Further discussion to the bill. Lead Garoppolo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein. Well, I look at your bill, and I see a Bermuda Triangle of boondoggles, Representative Hornstein. We see that you're choosing to replace the existing transit from Minneapolis to Duluth with a fixed rail train, despite the fact that we have right now demonstrated failure. I didn't realize, Representative Novotny, thank you for saying that. I didn't realize the fare box recovery for North Star was 2
percent. I knew it was bad. I didn't realize it was 2% bad. So we have the proven failure of the North Star Corridor, and in predictable fashion, we see that no one admits they're wrong. The focus is instead on, we just haven't spent enough money. We just haven't put enough money into it. So we've got the North Star commuter rail failing. We have the train to Duluth, which will fail. I did some research and tried to find another fixed rail commuter rail system anywhere in the world with a population that small on one end, and I couldn't find one. The Duluth region is a little over 80,000 people. I couldn't find a fixed rail train. Is that right, Madam Chair? My numbers?
Representative Garofalo, I think the larger Duluth Metro is slightly bigger, but we don't have to.
Okay, thank you.
That. Representative Garofalo.
I always respond to Representative Hornstein scowls. So we have that going on. The Southwest Light Rail Project, which is now the most expensive public works project in Minnesota history, is obsolete before it's even completed. One of the hubs on there has already been vacated, a place that was supposed to be one of the hubs for commuting, for workers, going to location. It's already been abandoned. We have huge multi-billion dollar fixed rail costs being built into the system, and those are all being paid for. Those are all taken care of. But if we want to take care of our roads, we want to expand our roads, we want to get those engineering grades improved, we're told we have to raise taxes. And with a $17.5 billion surplus, I don't think we need to raise taxes to be doing the essential things in government. And so I'll be voting no on your bill, Representative Hornstein. I'm hoping that at some point in the process we have some moderation in terms of the tax increases that are being levied, in terms of increased costs, in terms of things like the lid on I-94 that is just a boondoggle in waiting. I'm hoping, Representative Hornstein, we can appeal to your senses, or we get some legislators to stop what are ongoing costs to a series of boondoggles, and I'll be voting no. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, I'll go to Representative Hornstein to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. We always have a good, robust transportation discussion. There are really good questions raised on the other side of the aisle. I want to thank Representative Petersburg for being such a wonderful presence throughout this session as the Republican lead. And while we disagree on certain issues, there's many that we agree on. And he's been very, very helpful, particularly on process issues, and we have great communication, and I appreciate your partnership so much, Representative Petersburg. And good questions were raised, I think, here. I just wanted to comment on the idea of regressivity here. And at the end of the day, Madam Chair and members, transportation is about people, right? So what's regressive? Someone who is with a disability on a cold winter day waiting for a bus that doesn't come, that's regressive. What about someone who, like a friend of mine, Rachel, from Northeast Minneapolis, who hit a pothole on the way to work and now has to pay $1,000 to repair her car? That's regressive. And I am getting more and more stories about people getting flat tires and front end alignments because of the condition of our roads. They're paying something very regressive to fix their cars. What about the frontline worker that works at the airport that has to get up at 4 in the morning, take two buses and a train to get to work 3 hours later? Representative, I think it was Representative Novotny, maybe Representative Farr, had talked about the need, how we have to build a transportation system where people can get to where they want to go quickly, right? We don't have that in many instances. And what about the safety issues? What about the 400 people that lost their lives last year on our roads in Minnesota, which we address in this bill? That's regressive. So, members, we have a historic opportunity to match not only federal money, but to correct a wrong that has festered for 30 years when we have not put in new revenue into this system. General fund transfer alone won't do the job. So we have a variety of different funding sources to move us forward. We have been kicking the can down a pothole-filled road for way too long. This bill is transformative. It moves our state forward. All modes, all parts of the state. We didn't even talk about the fact that we fund small cities for the first time with dedicated revenue in this bill. If you are, live in a city of 5,000 or less, you're going to be really taken care of by this bill. All modes, all parts of the state. Members, please vote yes to finally move us forward in transportation in Minnesota.
Thank you very much, Representative Hornstein. And with that, Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House File 2887 as amended be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails and House File 2887 as amended has been placed on the general register. And we have no further business, but we'll see you tomorrow at 9 a.m. And with that, we are adjourned.